This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, new research shows that enrollment at the nation's community colleges is down about 15% over the last 2 years. We'll look at what's going on and what it means for the education and career prospects for those who would typically attend those schools in Wisconsin and around the country. Now, Republicans in the state legislature are out with a new set of bills they say will help with a shortage of workers in the state. The bills would change the rules on some safety net programs like unemployment and Medicaid. Some Democrats and advocates say the restrictions aren't the right approach. We're taking a closer look at the legislation with one of the Republican lawmakers behind that package of bills. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you rely on unemployment compensation, especially during the pandemic? If so, what do you think about the idea of tying the amount of benefits available to the state's unemployment rate? Are you a business owner who's had trouble hiring workers? Do you want to see changes in some of these safety net programs that might help you out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Senator Chris Capping is the state Senate president. He's a Republican representing Wisconsin's 33rd state Senate district, which covers much of Waukesha County. Senator Capping, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Can you talk about what led you and your colleagues to tackle this series of safety net related issues right now?
It's really been a lot of constituent contacts. It's been personal experience out there where there's very few people who have gone out and not, you know, 2 days ago, I went to get a couple of parts for my lawnmower for the snowblower, and I went up to the door, and there was a sign that said, "Sorry, we're closed because we can't find workers." There's restaurants that are limiting their hours. There's a Cousins by us that actually shut down on the weekends because they said we can't find people to work. Yet we see this crazy phenomenon where we've got. We were looking at the medical assistant and the food share numbers, and those are skyrocketing. We've got medical assistants up 40%. And when we looked into it, we found that there's a significant number of checks and balances that typically are in place, but because of COVID and some of the changes in the temporary laws, the integrity of the programs are no longer being checked. So, for instance, if you go out and you have a job interview and you simply just skip the interview. Or if you have a person who, we actually had a person in my district talk to us about this. They had the opportunity to go full time with their employer and they said, you know what, I'm on benefits right now and I don't have to get off of them. So I'm just going to stay on them, and they turned down the work. So those are the type of situations where we said we have to do something about the integrity of these programs, because very few people feel that fraudulent activity should be digging into the pot of money that has been set aside as a safety net for individuals who do need it. We want to make sure that people who are on the program actually need this to get them, you know, through their hard time.
I want to look at some of the specifics now. One of the bills that you actually co-sponsored would prohibit single adults from turning down a job to remain on Medicaid, that situation you just outlined. Can you talk about what would change and how it might be enforced?
So what would happen is this individual that we spoke with in this situation, they could go from part-time to a full-time. And if they turn down that job, which they did, so it basically will be an increase in employment, but it's the same thing. If you're not working, you're able to work, and you just simply choose not to accept the interview or the job opening, then there's a mechanism that the Department of Workforce Development would essentially create an option for most likely an employer to say, hey, I offer this person a position. We know that they're on unemployment insurance, and that's not what that program is for. If they can't work, that's a different situation. That's not what unemployment insurance is for. So that's really how that would function. It would just ensure that if somebody's getting unemployment benefits, it's because they can't find a job, not because they're choosing not to take a job.
With that situation with Medicaid, could there be some kind of solution that would say, hey, you're not risking your health care to get a better job? We can, I don't know, a sliding scale or something like that?
We actually have that in place already. So that's what Badger Care is. And so let's say somebody moves from half time to three quarter time, their paycheck's going to increase. And what we did years ago as part of Badger Care was say, let's create a step programs so that instead of just having the benefit cliff, which is kind of what you're alluding to, where all of a sudden you just lose all your benefits, you actually gradually transition off of government subsidy onto you paying part of the premium. So it's actually a graduated scale. As your income goes up, the amount that you pay goes up and the amount the government pay goes down. So we have a program in place at all levels to ensure that takes place.
Another bill in the package would tie the length of unemployment benefits available to the state's current unemployment rate. Can you talk about that change?
Yeah, that's something that I actually proposed a couple sessions ago. It's a situation where some other states already have this in place, but when we're looking at how can we better connect workers with the jobs that are available, these states saw significant declines in the people who were on unemployment and increases in people who moved into the workforce, back into the workforce, when they reduced the number of weeks that are available based on how much unemployment or where the unemployment rate is. The easy way to say that is, if there are more jobs available to the workforce, then there's going to be fewer weeks that you can be on the unemployment system, and that it really helps just connect the workers with the jobs that are out there.
Another issue we saw, of course, in the early stretch of the pandemic in particular, was a lot of delays in the state's unemployment compensation system. Another bill in the package you all are calling the unemployment system tune-up. Can you tell us what that would do?
Yes. Yeah, that actually, we expand the call center hours, so people who do have unemployment insurance needs, we want to make sure that they can get in so that they can get the benefits that the program has setting aside for them. We put in additional training for employers. Hey, here's how you can use the system. If you're going to be laying somebody off, here's some resources you can give that person so they know how to get in. We want to increase the audits of the work search. So right now, what the program had was you were supposed to be doing work searches because, again, these are not people who can't work. These are people who can work. They just, for some reason, lost their job. So we want to make sure that the work searches are still being done. And then what we did, too, is we said, hey, one of the problems that we had with the crazy increase in claims was we didn't have enough personnel. So we actually would allow the Department of Administration, which is probably the largest organization within state government, they can actually move employees into the Department of Workforce Development to assist with those claims. So they've got more flexibility in, hey, we have an increased demand and need. Let's make sure we've got the employees to handle that internally so we don't have people waiting over a year to get their benefits.
Talking to State Senator Chris Kapinga about a series of proposed changes to unemployment compensation and some Medicaid rules in Wisconsin, as employers say they're having a hard time finding people to work for them. Senator Kapinga, stepping back from some of the specifics, can you talk about your philosophy of what a safety net program should look like and how it should function?
Yeah, it actually stems from me growing up. So I grew up on a farm, and we were extremely poor. We had some very hard years. And I remember my parents going on to government assistance for a period of time. And I remember seeing that and the feeling that went with it. I was just like, I don't want to have this in my life. And I was able to step in and engage in the workforce. I think I started my first job when I was 10 years old. And, you know, we were very poor. So I was buying my own clothes at 12 years old. That's kind of the background of my drive to help people engage in purpose. And that you find that through engaging in what you're good at. Everybody's gifted at something. Let's help connect them with that so they can be independent of this government program that, you know, frankly, I've never met a person who's on a government program that says, oh, I love being in this situation. I don't want people to have to be in those situations. So that's why I've been working on this for 10 years on reforming our system to help connect people with available jobs.
And just our last half a minute or so, what's the timeline on this package?
Well, we just finalized it probably towards the end of the year. We were working on, hey, what is going to be in and out of this package? There were a lot of things proposed. So we finalized the package. Now the package is released. We have authors for the bills. and it's going into the co-sponsorship phase where the other legislators can look at it, and it'll start going through committee process. So the different committees will hear the bills. The public will have a chance to come in and express concerns, express support. And then if it passes out of committee, then we would bring it to the floor of the legislature in both houses. If it passes that, then the governor would have a chance at signing these into law, and we can start fixing some of the issues we have.
Senator Kapinga, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Senator Chris Kapinga is the president of the state Senate, a Republican representing Wisconsin's 33rd Senate district in Waukesha County. Up next, we'll hear from a researcher on safety net programs. That's coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at proposals that would limit some safety net benefits here in Wisconsin. Republican sponsors say the bills would help with the state's worker shortage. Some Democrats say the bills take access to those benefits in the wrong direction. Andrew Stettner is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, a progressive think tank focused on economic, racial, and gender equity. I talked to him earlier today. Can you take us back to the early days of the pandemic and talk about the scale of need there was for help for people who are unemployed during the pandemic?
Well, it's very unprecedented, you know, what we saw. One out of four Americans ended up needing an unemployment check because of the scale of the immediate closures and all the ripple effects through the service sector, especially tourism, restaurants. You know, there were tens of millions of Americans who lost their job. And because of unemployment benefits, we actually were able to stop any increase in poverty in 2020. That's how effective this system was, with the combination of state benefits and federal assistance.
Now, we still have the pandemic going on, of course, but those unemployment numbers have dropped a lot. Is this an okay time to dial back some of the extended benefits, the extended length of benefits that we had? I know some have been dialed back already. Can we get back to normal now with our unemployment system?
You know, the extensions of federal benefits and the special benefits for those who lost work because of the pandemic, you know, they started winding down of Labor Day of last year. And I think there is some regret that those benefits are not available. There are obviously many individuals who have to quit a job, this year because, you know, they had to take a 2-week quarantine and their employer says, you know, we don't have any time off. And so it's unfortunate that we don't have these benefits. And we have to remember, that unemployment is a difficult thing, you know, in all times. Especially when you lose a job permanently, people need time to look for the right job. We know still in this economy that there are many jobs that aren't really good out there. So you'll need time to find the right job for their skills and experience and to support their family.
We hear, though, about businesses having trouble finding enough workers, particular sectors, raising wages to bring in more workers. Isn't this the time to dial back on unemployment numbers when there, at least on paper, seems to be a lot of opportunity out there?
You know, the state that we're at, you know, right now with the unemployment benefit program, you know, in Wisconsin and states across the country, you know, the unemployment check covers less than half of your average paycheck. And no one wants to be on unemployment. But people, when they lose a job, they need that time to look for work and find the right job. And actually having a decent unemployment system helps people find a job. You know, if you're in a situation where you don't have any income support, it actually can be really hard to find work. Who's gonna watch your kids? How are you gonna put gas in the car? So having some cushion helps you go between jobs. But in this situation, I think we're already there. You know, benefits only last 26 weeks. They're less than half of your average paycheck. People know that there's no future in that, and they're going to return to work as quickly as we want. You know, we've gone to a situation when there were people complaining about these worker shortages when there were 16, 15 million people on unemployment benefits, and now when there are 2 million people on unemployment benefits, they're still blaming unemployment benefits. Something else is going on. The older Americans, you know, anxious about going back to work, lower immigration. You know, there's a lot of other factors going on right now with these employers struggling to find workers, and also haven't been able to get away with it for a really long time. You know, you compare what people used to get, you know, we were talking before, from walking into a factory or walking into a mine compared to what they do from walking into a Taco Bell or McDonald's. You know, the conditions are terrible. There's no job security, no benefits. And employers have been getting away with that for a long time. They're going to have to start raising their wages, because I think after the pandemic, people don't really want to put up with that anymore.
We're talking to Andrew Stettner, senior fellow at the Century Foundation, about unemployment benefits at this stage in the pandemic. Andrew, do you think there are policies that could remove some hurdles, some obstacles that might prevent people from seeking a job, from finding a good job for them?
Well, I think that we need to be much more active than we've been. You know, I think, and I've looked at what a number of governors have done. I saw a big announcement from the governor about how they're going to help connect people to jobs. And, you know, I dug into it, and it was all just a bunch of websites. You know, honestly, people need sometimes more than just tell you to go to a website. You need a counselor to talk to them. What are your skills? Where do you want to go? If that job that you had before is no longer there, where are you going to go? If you don't want to go back into retail, what do you want to do? What am I hearing as a job counselor from employers about what they need? Maybe you could go work in construction. Maybe you could work as a machinist, even though you never thought about it. Maybe you should go to some retraining. We've left people out of their own, and I think there's still a lot of people that are bewildered, you know, and confused. So I would say be more active. We call them active labor market policies. Get people, especially as the pandemic is hopefully easing, get them into job clubs, counseling sessions. I don't think we're doing enough in that area to connect workers to businesses. And this is very relevant for our older workers. Even at a time of job shortage, you know, an employer might say, well, you know, this guy's 57 years old. Is he going to be able to hack it? 62 years old, is he going to hack it? There's a lot of discrimination against older workers. When you have an agency that's in there and talking to the employer, saying, no, I've talked to this guy. I think he can really do it. Maybe you could try him out for 3 weeks. So I think being more active, also with our employers, to make sure that they're not discriminating, have ideas in their mind about who can do what job.
One thing on the table in the state legislature here in Wisconsin is an idea that, okay, if unemployment numbers go up above a certain level, to a high level, great, extended benefits kick in. When it comes back down to a lower level, we'll go back to our normal timeline of benefits. What do you think of that kind of, I guess you might call it a counter-cyclical approach to unemployment benefits?
You know, what I've seen from some of the proposals that actually would cut back, you know, beyond the basic 26-week package of benefits. And that would be a pretty shocking move for the state of Wisconsin. You know, this program was born in Wisconsin. The first unemployment benefit program was, in fact, the Wisconsin Plan. And the idea that temporary unemployment is a menace to society if people experience poverty and hardship after years of working. We should not cut back beyond the 26 weeks of benefits. That's the minimum amount that we should have in all economic conditions. You know, I had a Southern labor leader tell me once, you know, the unemployment rate is not 5%. If you're the one who's laid off, it's 100%. If you're the one who's working at 0%, you know, so if you, especially if you lose a good job paying with benefits, a company, as they do all the time, moves their production, you know, to overseas, you know, that's a big change for you. So that basic 26-week of benefits should be inviolate. You know, proposals and federal laws, they already only provide those additional weeks, 13 weeks of benefits, you know, for example, or 26 weeks as we had during the pandemic. They only provide those when there's a period of high unemployment. But that 26 weeks should not be scaled back. That's the basic promise that people have. And people work for 10, 15 years, they get laid off, and they say, well, I can't even get 26 weeks of benefits. You know, that doesn't seem, you know, right, especially for how little employers pay in, you know, for the program.
Another proposed change involves people who are receiving health coverage via Medicaid, Badger Care here in Wisconsin. The change would say, hey, if you're doing that, this is mostly applying to single people here. If you're doing that, if you refuse a higher paying job or a pay increase because you're worried that that's going to put you over the threshold for that health care coverage, we're still going to kick you off of that coverage. I'm guessing you're not wild about that idea, but is there something we could do to not penalize that person who's getting coverage for taking a higher paying job? Is there some sort of like graduated approach we could do?
You know, I think part of the issue is that, you know, there's some limitations, you know, that, you know, in our approach, you know, you have Medicaid, you know, benefits, which are generous, you know, maybe compared to what people can get from their employers or from the health exchange. We should not have health benefits, you know, the quality of them be so contingent and have these benefits cliffs. One thing we can do to help people is, you know, say, well, you can stay on Badger Care for another, you know, 6 months, even if you go over the limit, you know, so give people we call them a slide down rather than a cliff. We see that in childcare benefits. But the real thing is we should have healthcare, you know, really available for everyone who needs it on an affordable basis. That was in the Build Back Better Act that has not passed yet, which would basically cover all the costs for those middle income workers who have to go through the healthcare exchange and make it more similar to what people get in Medicaid.
As we wrap up, Andrew, is there a lesson that you're hoping we take at the state level, say, when it comes to unemployment that we might have learned from the pandemic?
I hope we learn how important it is, how important the unemployment program is to keeping people whole economically. Look at the forest for the trees. You know, the economy has bounced back faster than any forecaster believed it would. And families have money to spend, so much money that even prices for things like used cars has gone up. That's a success. So let's not cut back a system that really did everything we could have asked it to do.
Andrew, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob. We really appreciate the time.
That was my conversation with Andrew Stettner, senior fellow at the progressive think tank, the Century Foundation. I talked to him earlier today about some of the Republican proposals to limit safety net benefits like unemployment in Wisconsin. Earlier, we talked to Republican State Senate President Chris Kapinga about his perspective on that legislation. He's a sponsor of one of a package of bills related to those topics. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, pandemic-related supply chain issues still make shopping unpredictable. When are things going to clear up? Join in with your questions and experiences. You can get started right now. If you've had trouble finding a product in stock, the product you wanted in particular, are you seeing empty store shelves or are things going pretty smoothly in your shopping or in your workplace, your business, if you have one? Email ideas@wpr.org to share your thoughts for that conversation. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. The Badger will stay in Wisconsin. It seems like a natural, but it wasn't a sure thing. The badger in question is the metal badger sculpture that's been in the state capitol outside the governor's office since 1989. As reported by the Associated Press, the sculpture is made from melted-down cannons captured during the Spanish-American War. It rode on the USS Wisconsin during World War I, and it's been on loan from the U.S. Naval Academy Museum since the late 1980s. But as we've talked about on the show before, the museum said they wanted it back. Some leading Wisconsin political types made the case that the Badger belongs in the Badger State. And as of this week, we have a deal. The loan has been extended for another 50 years. We'll check back in on the status of the Badger in 2072. In the meantime, you can check it out on your next visit to the state capitol. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Listening for it to Central Time here on the Ideas Network, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, how is the air where you live? In some states, one-third of all residents live close to a toxic release site. Jen White shares your stories and new reporting into the impact one chemical plant is having on one of West Virginia's only majority black communities. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, a new report says there are a million fewer students in colleges and universities around the country since the pandemic began. According to the National Student Clearinghouse, that's a 6.6% decrease, the largest two-year drop in more than 50 years. The biggest decline is happening with community colleges. They're seeing a 13% drop during the pandemic. Those schools tend to be the nation's least expensive colleges and primarily serve people from low to moderate income families. There are nearly 1,000 of those schools in the U.S. One theory was that enrollment at all colleges might pick up the past fall semester, but the Clearinghouse says it appears that many 2020 high school grads have opted to work instead. Community college officials are now trying to figure out how to recruit and retain students, including with financial help and dual enrollment programs with local high schools. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Do you attend a community college or one of Wisconsin's technical colleges? Are you taking some time off? Are you planning on going back at some point? What would it take to get you to re-enroll? If you faced that decision, or maybe your kid did this year, last year, what was the decision between college, technical college, and work? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We're going to talk about some of the bigger picture stuff around the country in just a bit. First, an update on Wisconsin's technical colleges. Rich Kramer is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Eau Claire. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, you asked around a couple months back with our technical colleges in the state. What kind of things did you hear?
There was a wide variation in the percentage change in terms of enrollment by campus. So the technical college system puts out something called the Fact Book. It's an annual report on enrollment and all kinds of other things. And it had some pretty shocking numbers. From 2020 to 2021, the system saw a decline in enrollment of about 13%, 13.2. But some of the colleges within the system saw humongous declines. So, for example, the Nicolet Area Technical College, 32.8% decline. Madison Area Technical College, MATC, down 26.5%. 19% decline in enrollment at Gateway Technical College. Meanwhile, you had some campuses that only saw a fluctuation of about, 1.5% or so. So really a wide variation. And whenever I would reach out to technical college presidents or other administrators to ask about this, there was still a lot of optimism. People felt that this was going to be a blip in the radar and that it would correct. And I heard that there was a lot of enthusiasm. They would look at applications coming in and say that, there's a lot of pent-up demand, but still some pretty interesting numbers.
Did any of the officials you talked to talk about changing their strategies, having to do things to meet students where they are and try to turn those numbers around, or was it just kind of a wait-and-see approach?
I think higher education overall, with the pandemic and a lot of the face-to-face meetings and campus tours kind of out the window, there's been a lot more personal approach to recruiting students. So I heard that there was a lot of phone calls, real simple, but just getting on the phone and reaching out to applicants, encouraging them to keep, going with the process of applying. So a lot more personal kind of approach rather than just sending out, letters saying you've been accepted, et cetera. They really followed up to keep those kids on track.
Rich, thanks a lot for starting off our conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Eau Claire. We talked to him about the drop in student enrollment in the state's technical colleges, part of a nationwide trend. Martha Parham joins us now for a look at what's happening around the country and what's being done to recruit and retain students. She's Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. Martha, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Rich just gave us the numbers here in Wisconsin. Does that reflect a trend around the country?
Absolutely, it does. We're seeing about 10% across the board in declined enrollment at the nation's community colleges, which, as he mentioned, is quite alarming.
Can you talk about the role of community colleges here in Wisconsin? We call them technical colleges. In the first place, what is the basic concept and who they're reaching out to?
Oh, absolutely. The official term is they are there to serve those that can benefit. So really, our audience is anyone that can benefit from higher education. Community colleges across the nation serve about 12 million, 11.8 million students across the country. 6.8 million are in credit programs, or what the traditional kind of associate degree, first 2 years of college. And 5 million are in what we call tech career and technical education programs. So there are a lot of reasons that community colleges exist to serve these millions of students. I think you mentioned they are less expensive. They are credentialed. They're usually local. And provide a great many open doors for many students that wouldn't have any other way of obtaining higher education.
COVID-19 shook things up in pretty much all walks of life here in the country. What kind of things do you hear from member organizations about how COVID affected their operations?
Well, I mean, it affected them in many different ways, not the least of which is many of them had to shut down their college campuses and move everything to this remote online format, which they did. We also saw a great deal, you know, community colleges serve about 30% of the nation's first generation college students. And if you think about that, like many of them don't come from a college going culture. So they're navigating registering, applying, taking classes in this online format when they don't really have any frame of reference for doing so. So many of our colleges were able to find ways, I think those phone calls that were mentioned earlier, one of those ways, to really reach out to the local community and let students know what their options were, what's available to them, what resources and benefits that community colleges could provide. But COVID impacted everything in teaching and learning, in the way students teach and were taught and were learning. Many colleges were also providing technology like computers, laptops, hotspots for Wi-Fi. College parking lots were turned into Wi-Fi hotspots so students could take classes and exams in a socially distanced way. Many colleges provided food to students that had hunger insecurities and housing insecurities. So the colleges across the country have really stepped up to help students provide students the least interruption to their higher education pathway as possible.
Another issue that people have put out as a theory here for why people aren't going back to community colleges now is the pandemic rebound in the economy means wages have gone up, maybe for the same kind of jobs that people going to community college or technical college might have planned on applying for. And they're making the decision, hey, I'm going to take this higher wage now as opposed to going into that educational system now. Is that something you're seeing?
I don't have any data, but it's definitely something that we're hearing. College presidents from across the country are telling us that, you know, they have students that are working and what would always have been considered, you know, kind of entry level jobs that are starting at much higher wages, some up to $20, $25 an hour. And so they're choosing to work. And anecdotally, that's what we are hearing from, you know, kind of across the board.
We're talking about a decline in enrollment at the nation's community colleges and technical colleges. Martha Parham is with us, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. Now we want to hear from you, your story at 800-642-1234. Do you attend a technical or community college? Were you planning on going but decided to take a job during the pandemic instead? Can you talk about what went into that decision? Could it be talking about you? Maybe we're talking about your student, your new high school graduate. If you're in high school, if you're a senior right now, how are you weighing technical college versus going right into the job market? If you work or teach at a technical college in the state, what are you seeing? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about enrollment at community and technical colleges in the U.S. A new report from the National Student Clearinghouse shows that there are 15% fewer students than in the fall of 2019. Officials point toward the pandemic and the economic and social changes of the last couple of years. We're looking at what those colleges are doing now to recruit and retain students, and sometimes retrain students, with Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges, hoping to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you go to one of our technical colleges here in the state or a community college elsewhere? Would you recommend it to somebody maybe just getting ready to graduate high school this spring? Was it a good experience, a valuable experience for you? Do you go to one or work at one right now? Were you on the fence making that decision, or maybe your kid was? Do I go to technical college, or do I go right into the job market? What did you weigh? What decision did you make? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Christine on Facebook, who says tech college administrators are asking faculty to do more with less, using adjuncts whenever possible, paying them only for class time, no prep time. Here in Wisconsin, Christine says the union is a shell since Act 10. Invest in full-time faculty, pay them well, and program quality goes way up. Christine pointing toward budget issues, staffing issues. Martha, are these concerns you hear from schools around the country?
Well, of course. Community colleges are the least funded segment of higher education. And, you know, it's kind of in our nature to be all things to all people, whether in our formal mission or not. We really do try to meet the needs of the local community and students that reside in that local community. And that also, you know, means that we try to work with business partners in local communities. And so by doing that, you know, the resources are scarce. Again, it's the least funded sector of higher education. And so it's not unusual that colleges do, you know, whatever they have in their power and within their resources to provide the classes that they need.
Thanks for posting that, Christine, on Facebook. We mentioned, you know, those personal calls that schools are making to students to try to recruit them, to retain them. Have you seen other kinds of strategies, Martha, for how schools are trying to keep the students they might have had in the past, or maybe reach out to new demographics?
Absolutely. We are seeing a lot of, you know, calling. We're seeing a lot of staff that was repurposed, for lack of a better word, that maybe had on-campus jobs that were retrained so that they could be that touch point for students and contact them. And we've seen colleges that have actually not just contacted them about recruitment and initial attendance, but also contacted them as they were studying to make sure they were staying on track and they had the resources they need. In other cases, we've seen colleges that provide, that have partnerships with food delivery services and grocery delivery services to make sure that students have, you know, adequate food at home during this time. A lot of community college students work. In fact, over 70% of community college students work. Many of them lost their jobs at the initial start of the pandemic. And so a lot of these concerns, you know, were alleviated by these actions by community colleges. We've seen a lot of access to healthcare, mental health care, jobs, child care, anything that colleges can do, again, to eliminate barriers to completion, we've seen across the country.
Talking to Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges, talking about a decline over the last couple of years in enrollment in community colleges, technical colleges here in Wisconsin. Still time for you to share your story, maybe your decision, what led you to attend technical college over the last couple of years, or to not to. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Martha, I'm glad you mentioned all the students who were working and going to technical colleges. I talked about kind of an either or decision facing high school students. Can you talk about the way community colleges work around work schedules so that people can do both at the same time?
Well, they work to maintain flexibility in course offerings, in support services. And really, if there is a silver lining to the pandemic, making those services accessible around the clock when students need them has certainly been one of those silver lining outcomes. We've seen, you know, colleges have moved their classes to online formats. Sometimes they're synchronous, sometimes they're asynchronous. So students can work and then do their classes when they have the time, whether that's early morning, late at night, depending on their schedule. Another thing we've seen is, you know, community college students, a lot of them are adult learners with adult responsibilities, including children, in addition to their jobs. So, you know, we're seeing colleges providing hotspots so that students have access to broadband when they have kids that are at home taking school online while they're trying to work online and be in school online. So colleges have really worked to develop programs and services that help, like you said earlier, meet students where they are and provide them with resources that they need when they need them.
We got a caller at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Almena. Paul, hi.
Hello. I was just wondering if your speaker could comment on the lack of respect that technical colleges receive in things like anytime you have to fill out your higher education last graduate, because they usually have GED, high school diploma, some college, or four-year degree. It never has a place for... Even in the U.S. Census, it doesn't have a place for technical graduate. I graduated about 38 years ago. I've been very successful with it and am proud of it, and just wondered what we can do to get more recognition.
And, Paul, before we let you go, where did you go and what was your course of study that led to good outcomes for you?
I went to what was what is Northland College now. It was WITI when I went, Wisconsin Indiana Technical Institute, and then it changed to WITC and then just recently changed its name again. I went for packaging machinery repair. Landed me a job, me and two classmates, a job in Houston, Texas, right out of school. And then I worked in the Twin Cities for a while before coming back to the farm for a few years, and now I've worked at the same plant here locally for over 20 years.
Well, Paul, glad you came back to Wisconsin. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Martha, his first point, no respect sometimes, Paul says, even when you're filling out an online form or something like that for community and technical colleges.
Yeah, I mean, at some levels, we can be the Rodney Dangerfield of higher education. But I think that tide has really shifted, and Paul, I'm really thankful for you for sharing your story. We love to hear success stories. And you know, we've seen, certainly, you know, I've been in Washington for about 7 years now. And in that time, I've seen a great deal of shift toward community colleges being a solution and a provider of solution, not only for higher education, but also in particular, actually, for these career and technical education programs. We're seeing a lot of partnering from very large technology companies that are looking to the community colleges to ensure that students have the programs that will allow them to be successful in work. But in terms of stigma, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't there. There has been, you know, a stigma about community colleges is where you go when you don't get into the four-year university of your choice. But I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful because I think parents and students are, let's just say, a little trepidatious about getting into massive debt to send their kids to college. So really, community college is a smart choice. You can go for 2 years, save a lot of money, and then go to the four-year college of your choice. And still have that pathway open to you without incurring extra debt. In terms of career and technical education and those certificate programs, again, they're gaining in popularity, and we're seeing that not everyone, you know, needs to have an office job. And so the popularity of programs like welding, carpentry, truck driving, and other career and technical education programs are really taking off. I think it would be interesting to mention that community colleges train about 80% of the nation's first responders. So your firefighters, police officers, EMTs. So community colleges have a place. And while there is still a stigma attached, I think I'm hopeful that that stigma is really losing ground.
Paul, thanks for that call. And Martha, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Martha Parham, Senior Vice President of Public Relations for the American Association of Community Colleges. We talked to her today about the decline in enrollment at two-year schools around the country. Earlier, we looked at the situation here in Wisconsin with WPR reporter Rich Kramer. Still time for you to share your thoughts, your story, maybe, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, what's the most amazing sports achievement or streak or performance in the history of sports? Our guest has some ideas, and you could share yours. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. If you're not a perfectionist in the kitchen, that's okay. I'm not either. We'll get advice from the author of a cookbook called Good Enough. That's tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, alcohol-induced deaths increased drastically in Wisconsin. We'll look at what the data says and what treatment and prevention efforts could look like. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.